Welcome, everybody. You are now listening to the Monique Rodriguez, the Secret Sauce to Success podcast show. Well, I will be sharing tips on business, being a God-fearing wife, a mom, an entrepreneur, and I'm also going to do a few boss interviews on this podcast show. So thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to download and subscribe to my podcast show because you are in for a treat. So thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Secret Sauce to Success podcast show where you have me, your host, Monique Rodriguez. And today I am doing another boss interview. And today I am interviewing my friend, Rachel. She is the owner and CEO of Urban Skin RX, which is in major retail stores like your Targets and your CVS's of the world. And I had the opportunity to interview her just to hear her story. I already know her story, but I thought it would be pretty interesting for my listeners to hear her story, to find out how she's built her brand, how she got into retail, and to hear how someone else got into retail from their perspective and not just from my perspective, because everyone's journey is different. And what a lot of people don't know is that Rachel has been doing this for years, almost 15 years. And people look at her and they think that she's came out of nowhere, but she's been doing this for a very long time. And she's built her brand from scratch. So I think that her story is pretty interesting. And I hope that you find her story pretty interesting as well. And also to give you some guidance if you're looking to start a skincare line. Or again, if you're looking to go in business in general, you know, the principles of business don't change. The roadmap is the same. You just apply your own uniqueness to your brand or to your business and you just soar and you rock out. And I always tell all of my mentees that. So I hope you guys love this episode just as much as I love recording it. So without further ado, let's get into this episode with Rachel, owner and CEO of Urban Skin RX.
So thank you so much for joining this podcast. I'm really excited to have you as a guest speaker today. You know, me and Rachel, we're really good friends. I met you actually at Target. That was our first meeting. And we really just connected and clicked. And, you know, we've been friends ever since. And it seems like I've known you forever. Like, we're doing the Beauty Biz Tour right now. We're doing Essence together. So we've done a lot of collaborations together and our energies just vibe and we just click. And you're a really good friend of mine. So when I thought of who do I want to have as guests as a part of my podcast show, I picked from my circle of already business besties that I have. And so you were one of them. So thank you again for being a part of this podcast. So I just want to dive like right into it. And I want to know a little bit more about Rachel. I know about Rachel, but my listeners don't know about Rachel. So can you tell me who is Rachel, CEO of Urban Skin RX?
Yeah. Well, first off, thank you so much for having me. You know, I'm a huge fan of yours. It's really exciting when I actually like get to know on a personal level people that I kind of like admire and look up to. So I'm just, you know, it's surreal to be on your podcast and I love it. But who am I? So the things that I probably identify the most as is I very much identify as a single mother, an entrepreneur, of a family woman. You know, my mother is my best friend. I'm somebody who has struggled with self-image issues. I was really overweight growing up with a face full of acne. So I'm somebody that I'm kind of a mixed bag. Like on one hand, I'm very like confident as like a boss woman. And but on the other hand, like I battle with, you know, self-image issues. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about owning a skincare line and owning a clinical skincare line, because, you know, I know what it's like to not feel good about your appearance. And so creating things that make me feel more confident about my looks, as well as knowing that I'm helping other women and men with that, really is something I'm very prideful. I think I'm an amazing best friend. People always laugh at me because they say everybody is my best friend, but I really am blessed to literally have like at least 10 best friends, like people that I've known for 15 plus years. And, you know, I've been burned by a couple people along the way, and it kind of shut me off from allowing new people into my life. But I had a talk with myself this year, and I'm like, you know what? I'm 37, about to be 38. I'm smart. Like, I know that I've learned from my past mistakes, and I've learned how to trust that inner voice that I used to ignore. And there's too many great women out there that I should not be closed off to. So I'm so happy that I'm more open, because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have developed a relationship with you or Melissa from the Lit Bar. And so I think I'm a friend, I'm a mother, and definitely a very huge part of my personality, part of my life, is being an entrepreneur, a workaholic.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I don't know if you know this, but that's something that I struggle with. I actually think that we kind of had this conversation when we were, I forgot what city we were in, and we were talking about, like, friendships and, like, you know, how sometimes you lose friendships along the way in your journey to entrepreneurship, because sometimes you have jealousy. People, you know, they don't understand why you decided to take a different path. So, you know, you deal with that a lot. And you, like you say, you get burned by a lot of people. So I had to teach myself to not be as close, because the thing is, I'm already a very reserved, introverted person. So when people like do me wrong, it kind of makes me want to like shut off even more. And I went to a conference or a retreat with my friend Arian in Aspen last year. And one of the speakers there was just talking about, like, you know, trust issues and how, you know, we just got to pray for discernment and not necessarily just cut people off because we've been hurt by other people, because you miss out on the opportunity of great people that are coming into your lives. And honestly, like, I've met some really good people in my adulthood that, like you said, if I would have been closed off, I probably wouldn't have had the friendship that I have, such as you, such as Arian, Nicole, you know, people that I've met on Instagram or at like different events. You can't form those relationships if you're so worried about people hurting you. You just got to have that spirit of discernment. So that's so true. So tell me, like, how did you get into like skincare? How did you even start Urban Skin?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting story. It's, I'll try to give you as much of a condensed one as I can, but it's not that short. But as I said, I grew up Northern California. I was extremely overweight as a child. I think I was like 140 pounds at like 9 or 10 years old. I developed a nevus mole on the side of my mouth, so it looked like I had like a big chocolate stain right next to my mouth. And then to make matters worse, then I developed acne. So I was very much bullied growing up. I felt horrible about my looks. And gosh, probably in junior high, I started going to UCSF Medical Center, and they would try out different lasers to remove the mole from the side of my face, because they were scared if they cut it out, it would distort my smile. So, you know, I was very much immersed in the clinical skincare industry from a young age, like going to med spas, going to dermatologists, and knew probably like around 14, 15 years old that I wanted to be an esthetician and own my own med spa. And my parents, who have more traditional professions, they weren't really into that idea. They were like, you got to go to college. And so they kind of like to motivate me, because I wasn't very motivated in school, was like, if you graduate college, we'll pay for you to go to esthetician school. I ended up, you know, moving to North Carolina in the middle of college, finishing college out here. And, basically 5 days later went to esthetician school. And, you know, moving from Northern California, which, to be honest with you, people think California is so diverse. It's really not. It definitely didn't have a large African-American population, not like the South did. But my best friend that I grew up with, she was half black and half white. And my aunt was married to a man that he was Native American and African American, and my other uncle, he was married to a Japanese woman. So I did come from diversity. And so I was always like just aware of, you know, being like diversity around me and being inclusive. And, you know, plus I was always a very compassionate person for any form of injustice just because I was bullied. And so when I got into the skincare industry in a place like Charlotte, that had such a large African-American population and quickly noticed that it was like just a Caucasian industry. Like it was basically like all the teachers were Caucasian. Most of the students were, we weren't learning about any of the skin conditions and treatments for diverse skin. And then when I started hearing people say, oh yeah, I went to this laser hair removal place and they turned me away because they said that they had devices that, you know, would burn my skin. I was like, this is crazy. And so, you know, I basically kind of self-taught myself and just really pushed my teachers to try to teach me anything they could. And I would even order literally dermatology textbooks online from Amazon to teach me how to treat skin of color. And so I got my first job working for a chiropractor who he opened a med spa. Like his wife was going to a laser center, spending all this money on Botox and laser hair removal. So he just thought oh, this can be easy money. And so I got my first job with him and he started a med spa, in an office park where nobody could see where it was. And he had zero advertising budget. And by chance, he bought a laser, which was a YAG 1064 nanometer laser, which is one of the few lasers at the time that was safe for doing laser hair removal on all skin tones, including darker skin. And I don't even think he knew it, but during the training, I learned that. And so my boyfriend at the time, who was African American, he had really bad ingrown hairs on his neck. And so luckily I took an amazing before and after picture and I lasered his neckline, killed all the hair, which obviously stopped his ingrown hairs because without hair growing, you can't have ingrown hairs. And so I'm sitting there making maybe $10 an hour, you know, seeing no clients because it's in this office park with no advertising budget. So I'm this would be such an amazing treatment to advertise to African-American men. I know so many of his friends that also complain about ingrown hairs. I'm all Black men go to the barbershop. And so I basically created this flyer and started going to all these barbershops, which was very intimidating. Being a woman walking into barbershops is just intimidating in general. And we started to get some business. And so the chiropractor was seeing that, dang, you know, this is a young girl, but she kind of knows a little bit about business. He came to me. He's like, what else do you think we should do? I said, you know, I think that we should have a radio commercial, on an R&B station or a hip hop station and say that we specialize in laser hair removal for darker skin. And so he gave me $1,000 budget and I wrote this radio commercial and the phone started to ring. And it just was this moment for me was I had always planned on opening a med spa. I didn't think I would do it at 22, 23. I'd planned on probably working in the industry for 5 to 10 years and learning. But I was I think this is my calling. He doesn't give a shit about inclusivity. This is amazing. On one hand, I love helping people look better. And on the other hand, there's a real injustice going on that I feel I could make a difference. And there's I know that there's a demand that's not being met. And so my parents, obviously I didn't have the money, I didn't have the credit. And my mom, who was always a big supporter of mine, she's well, write a business plan and maybe I can talk to your dad about helping you. So I wrote a business plan. And then they agreed to co-sign on a small loan for me. And I opened up my first business, my first medical spa called Urban Skin Solutions in Charlotte, North Carolina in 2006 with a laser, a part-time business manager. She worked from 9 to 2 and one receptionist. And I mean, it was crazy. But from the beginning, it was successful. Obviously in my business plan, I had put together money I needed for a marketing budget. But from the get-go, it was always successful and always grew. And that's how, you know, obviously now I own a product line and I'm a formulator and my career has transitioned. I still own the medical spa and now the medical spa has 30 employees and 10 lasers and its own pharmacy and doctors that work there. But about 6 years ago, I started making skincare products and it was actually initially first to just really offer it at my med spa because I was like, why am I going to sell all these other skincare product lines? Like, I just want to brand myself. And then,
Right, which is smart.
And then people like Fantasia and Tasha Cobbs would come in and get treatments, and they would pick up my products and they would post them on Instagram, and people would call and they'd be like, well, we want to buy the products that Fantasia keeps raving about. And so I ended up putting together a website, and then just from there, it just kind of organically grew. And now, you know, 13 years after starting my med spa, 6 years after starting my skincare line, you know, now I'm really spending about 90% of the time working on my skincare line. And I do, I'm still technically the CEO of my med spa and I do oversee it, but I have a business manager and we get together about once a week and I help her make the bigger decisions, but I'm not really running it day to day like I used to.
Oh, so you have a business manager that actually runs the med spa. So you're more so over like the operations of the skincare line, correct?
Correct. Like even last year, I would say I was spending about 30% of my time on the med spa, but every year it's just getting less and less because, you know, obviously from a business perspective, you know, from a, like when you look at which business really can scale to such a bigger level, it's going to be the skincare line. I don't have any desire to open up multiple med spas. It's a really, really hard business to run. And so I did have to make a decision of like, where should I prioritize my time? And the skincare line is, you know, I think the smarter direction.
So you had brick and mortar and you branched out into actually like kind of like e-commerce because your skincare line was sold in your spa and e-commerce. So unlike me, I started on e-commerce. I didn't start with brick and mortar. I know a lot of people struggle and they wonder like, should they start with the brick and mortar? Should they start on e-commerce? So how would you advise someone that is trying to start their company?
I'm not a fan of brick and mortars. Like it's so much work and it's so much overhead. I mean, I definitely think if you can go the route of like a DTC, direct to consumer e-commerce platform, that is by far the way to go. It's just the profit margin is just so much bigger than having a brick and mortar. I know sometimes people, especially those in the beauty industry, like we love like a beautifully decorated business that people can walk into and you can show off. But like, you know, I really encourage people to have a beautifully decorated website that's optimized.
Right.
Like, you know, like, or, you know, have an Instagram page that's popping where you can show off your cute house and like maybe your cute personal office, but don't get caught up in the brick and mortar if you don't have to.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely think that, you know, brick and mortar is very challenging. I mean, and it's when you do e-commerce, it's low overhead. So especially like if you had no money like me, like I couldn't even afford to do brick and mortar in the beginning. I had to build up my platform on e-commerce and it was low overhead. The digital space is like really like growing and it's where it's at. So I think that it was great for the listeners to hear from your perspective because you've done both.
And there is nothing better than waking up and looking and seeing all the money you made while you were asleep.
While you're asleep.
I can't make money while I sleep, like at my business, no, my med spa. When it's closed, it's closed.
Yep, you're absolutely right. So speaking of like your team, because you had to like trust someone to run your med spa while you're not there and hopefully they can run it with your same vision, with your same brand voice. And it's really hard to like trust people. So what do you look for when you hire your team? Because I think for me on the outside looking in, it seems like you got a lot of people that work for you.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm up to 50 employees. I have about 30 at the med spa and about 18 with my skincare line. I mean, that's the hardest part. I mean, obviously making a good product that works and there's a demand for is a necessity, but you know, if it's successful, you have to, it can't just be you doing everything, especially if it grows and it's scalable. You need people and people are difficult. Like we all know the world we're living in is pretty toxic, but I mean, there's great people out there and there's shady people out there. And, You know, I'm a big believer in multiple interviews. Like, obviously, as an entrepreneur, like, you're busy. You might feel desperate to fill a position, and you might feel like after one conversation, like, oh, they're good. They got this great resume, and we had a great conversation. But it's really interesting to see how people start to really show you who they are after that third, fourth, and fifth interview. They might come a little bit later. They might, like, you know, you might catch them in a lie. Like, it's just, they might like lose interest. Do you know what I mean? So I do believe in an extensive interview process. I do believe in thorough background checks. Like, I used to not do that stuff, and I've just been burned one too many times. I mean, somebody has really horrible credit and filed bankruptcy really recently, it might show you that although on a personal level, I don't judge you, but maybe they're not the most responsible person, and maybe they're not right to be your accountant or whoever it is. So, you know, I'm also a firm believer in really intricate commission and bonus structures that are really tailored to each position, like down to even my customer experience team, from, you know, like how many, making sure that every night there's no open tickets before they leave, what the ratings of their customer experience is like. You know, we listen to recorded phone calls. Like, I'm not just applying a commission structure or a bonus structure where it's like, hey, if we hit this mark, everybody gets bonused out this year. No, I'm trying to figure out for each position, like, where are the areas that I worry you might drop the ball on, and how can I reward you, like, for you going above and beyond in your particular position.
Right. I think I'm a huge advocate of rewards and bonuses, because you should reward your employees because they work hard and they're building your vision and they're building your dream. And I like to include my team. So it's like, you know, you rarely hear me at the office say, like, I'm the CEO. Like, I don't even use that word. Like, I know what I created. I know this is my company, but this is a team effort. I didn't get here by myself. It takes a team, and you definitely want to reward your people that are along the ride with you, because it's a lot of work. And for me, like, I look at character and personality. I rarely go by like resumes, because you can have a really good resume and it can say so much about you, and your resume can look really good on paper. But when you get in the door, you may interview very well. But like you said, after you hire them, then they totally flip or they don't do the job. And I was actually talking to one of my friends, Arian, because we were having this debate before. I told her, I said, people fire themselves. Like, I don't fire people. People fire themselves because they're always doing something that they're not doing their job. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. And you eliminate your own position. So me, I like to like mesh with people and like fill out their energy and their vibe and like ask for different personality traits and questions. Because I want to know who you are as a person, and I want to know how your character is, how your integrity is. Like, that's important. Because I feel like skills and things like that can be taught. Now, I'm not saying that I'll hire anybody. You can't have any skills, but I really do look for like good personality traits. Because these people are building your team. Yeah.
I agree. But I mean, overall, that's the hardest part of my job is recruiting the right people, you know, just growing my team. There's been some positions that have been really hard for me to fill for my company. And then just like another thing I think for me is, obviously, I own two companies. They're growing faster than what I can keep up with. I'm a single mom. I travel constantly for speaking engagements, meetings. I deal with ups and downs, bad news. And I think for a while, I was really projecting my stress onto my team. And I had to really have a talk with myself, like, hey, you're the mom. Like, how I treat my daughter, how sometimes, I'm not saying you just want to be completely fake, but, you know, I set the mood, and, you know, I have to make sure to keep everybody positive and motivated, and energy, you know, can, it just can, you know, really affect people. And I've noticed that, like, since I've been a lot more conscious of, like, you know, really trying to project positivity, even though when inside sometimes I am stressed out, I do feel like I've seen it make a difference with my team.
Right. Absolutely. Great points there. So let's talk about, you mentioned, you know, you built this company while being a single mom. Your daughter is so adorable. I've met Rosie. She's so funny. And I'm sure Instagram knows Rosie. How has it been with being a single parent, running a business, and actually like starting? Because I think you were pregnant while, you had already started your business while you were pregnant, right?
Yeah, no. So she's 7. So, you know, I've owned my business for 13 years. I mean, honestly, I'll tell you, I would not be on the level I am today. Not that I'm on anywhere close to where I want to be, but I would say, I can say at this point, I'm successful. And, you know, my business always did well, but when I had her, so I had been in a pretty toxic relationship, with her father, and he was just treating me real bad, you know, cheating on me, not giving me what I deserved. And I actually ended up taking her home from the hospital by myself. Like, he pretty much left me. He was like, this is how I'm going to be. And I'm like, well, I can't have a daughter around this. And so I took her home by myself. I had no family around. She ended up with colic. And, you know, being a single mom, you know, I didn't want a nanny to raise my daughter. You know, obviously I needed help, but I didn't want like a live-in nanny or anything. So I'd get home from work, let's say 6:30, 7 o'clock. Well, I'm a good mom. I keep my daughter on a schedule. So since she's been little, she's gone to sleep at like 8:30. Well, as a single mom, that means when your child goes to sleep, you can't go anywhere. I can't walk across the street. I can't drive to Target. I'm stuck. And so I really threw myself into my work, and I really threw myself into Instagram. Like, I really got on this whole influencer thing, because I had seen, you know, kind of like the impact that Fantasia and Tasha Cobbs, their relationship in affiliation with my company had. And so I just started really like, you know, going on like Huda Beauty's page and like screenshotting like every influencer, beauty influencer, makeup artist in the world, and sending them emails and sending them free products, and like really building up my Instagram page. And I think like, just like being that single mom and being stuck in the house and having that discipline to make sure that I was the best mom in the world, it kind of transcended into my business, as well as I think I was so tired of being not treated right by people during my lifetime, like being bullied as a child, being in really negative relationships with men. I kind of like was like, I'm going to show everybody. Like, you think that like, I'm just like somebody to be like treated like whatever, like I'm going to make everybody, you know, regret how they've treated me. Like, they're going to end up.
Wow.
So it's just, it's kind of a combination of just everything like really lit a fire under me to just like grow and grow. And so it was one of the most painful times in my life and one of the most lonely times in my life. But you know, there is always a silver lining. Like, who would have thought that being like fat with some awful mole in my face and then being this in this toxic relationship and all these really painful things would have led me to like create this like multi-million dollar company? It was like all those things combined, like fueled me to like this dream that a lot of people didn't believe in. A lot of people felt like, you know, you're not African American, or you're this and you're that, and like, you know, nobody's gonna believe in this. And I just like was so passionate about it because the things I had gone through and the things I had seen. And I think it's just a true testament of like, you have to stay true to who you are in your story. And like, now it's working out.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's why I always tell people, like, you see the glory, but you don't know the story. And like, your pain will lead you to your purpose. You had a bigger purpose in life. And, you know, we all go through things and we all go through challenges. Everybody's journey is different. And I didn't even know to that degree of like the pain you went through. Like, I knew a little bit, but I didn't even know to that extent. So, wow, I'm like extremely proud of you. I'm proud of you anyway, but yeah, everybody's testimony is different. So Urban Skin is in like major retail. I remember I was in Florida and I went to the aisle to look at like the skincare, because your brand was in there, Melissa's brand was in there, and obviously I was checking on my brand. So I check on like my brands, right? and the lady that was the Target worker or employee was in the aisle with me, and I was asking her, like, where are the products? Because they didn't have any products on the shelf. And she was like, these products sell so fast, we can't keep them on the shelf. And I was like, well, that's what I like to hear. But y'all still got to get more product in because more people need to buy it.
I know, right? Out of stocks are a gift and a curse. It's like on one hand, you're just proud that they're selling, and on the other hand, you're like, but there's so much potential money in clients that we're not retaining.
Yeah. So how was your journey with retail? What would you say the steps were that you took to get into a major retail like a Target?
Yeah, so that was interesting. So, you know, I was a prestige line, like with a real high price point, you know, like my average order online was $125 when I went to Target, and I had individual products that at the lowest were $28 to $72. And so, you know, I just like had this dream of getting into retail and wasn't really thoroughly thinking about it. And so when my COO told me that he had a connection at Target, like not at Target, but with a broker, you know, that could help get my brand to Target. So I'm thinking every time I go to Target, I spend like $200-$300. So I was like, just thinking it would work. And when I got the meeting with Target, you know, obviously I quickly learned that my price point was not going to work. They wanted all my prices like under $20, like closer to $9.99. And so it was just like, they wanted my products. They're like, okay, we'll take you. This is exactly what we've been looking for. We've been looking for an elevated multicultural skincare line. And we haven't been able to find it. And so just try to strategize. And initially the strategy was like, my cleansing bars, which were my kind of like my hero products, they lasted about 3 to 4 months, and they were $28, and they were 3.3 ounces. So what we did was we made the 3.7 ounces, dropped the price to $24, and then made a unique size for Target for 2 ounces for $12.99. So we basically had a 2 ounce size in Target for $12.99 and a 3.7 ounce size on our website for $24. And, you know, it worked. Like, you know, people bought them. Our website didn't lose any sales. If anything, it grew. But then another hurdle happened. They're like, you're doing great. We need more products. But the whole like smaller size, cheaper price didn't work for everything. And, you know, at the time, my business was still doing like about $2 million. And because most of my sales were coming in from online, I was able to keep that whole profit margin, and I only had 4 employees. So, you know, I'm making good money, and I'm like, gosh, I can't just cut all my prices in a quarter and risk all the money that I'm making online for Target. Like, what if we don't continue to do as well? So it was really scary for me. But overall, what we ended up deciding to do was split the line into two lines. Like, you think of kind of like Mark by Marc Jacobs and Marc Jacobs, like where, and we're in that process right now where I'm making like some unique formulas just for Target, Ulta, and CVS, where I basically, as a formulator, there's some really amazing ingredients out there that aren't as expensive and still work really well. And those are the formulas that I'm creating for what we would call like mass or mass. And then a lot of my long time formulas that are just combinations of really high level actives that are fancy, you know, more just specialty ingredients that I can't make at a price point that works for, you know, under $20. That's part of my now called Pro Strength by Urban Skin RX line. And my dream actually is, which I am in talks with it, is to have a successful prestige line that you see at like Sephora, Nordstrom's, Neiman Marcus, and then you see my other line, Urban Skin RX, the melanin expert, in mass and drug like CVS and Target.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Which makes sense. I mean, I knew that, but you know, our listeners didn't know that. I think that you have those two separate lines, the Masstige and the Prestige. So you're like doing some really amazing things, like almost a jack of all trades, because it's kind of like hard, because I tell people like to focus on a niche. And I think that you found that niche, but you made that niche like kind of diversified, because, you know, I guess starting out, it's really hard to try to be message and prestige at the same time. But you didn't always start with the message price. You started as a prestigious brand and you kind of just diversified as your company grew. And I always tell people, like, you know, just narrow down focus as your company grows and expands. You will be able to diversify, but you got to start somewhere. You got to start small. Speaking of like starting small, how has the capital been with you, you know, building your brand? Like, have you had to reach out to investors, like starting out? Like, did you use your own funding? How was funding for you with starting your brand?
Yeah, so it was really, I'm kind of an anomaly, like having that med spa and working with labs. My med spa really already had a consumer base ready to buy products. And I worked with labs. Sorry, I hit the mute button.
Okay. So you're saying you were able to fund it by?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically funded by a clientele that I already had visiting my med spa. And, just as the demand grew, my volumes of my products would go up. And then obviously, selling through a website, I was able to keep that profit margin. So when I'm selling a product for $60 rather than like Ulta taking half, really, yeah, I'm keeping the whole entire thing. If I'm making a product for $5, $6, I'm keeping 55 of it. And so that was allowing me to build my team, pay for digital advertising, like things like that. And so I really didn't ever have a loan for my skincare line. It just paid for itself as it went. But then what ended up happening, which a lot of people don't realize, is retail is extremely expensive. And
yeah,
when I got the opportunity to go into like Target and Ulta and CVS, you know, you have to create a tremendous amount of inventory and you have to do it way in advance. And my laboratory, like let's say I'm creating 10,000 even tone bars and they cost me, let's say $5 each. Well, that's $50,000. Well, my lab, they need 50% of that money up front. So they need $25,000. Well, it takes them, you know, 3-4 months to make the product. We ship it, you know, once they make it, I have to pay them the other $25,000. So I'm out $50,000. Then Target doesn't order all $10,000 that day. They might order $1,500 and then 6 weeks later, another $1,500 or whatever. So it might be 6 to 9 months and then they have 60 day terms, as you know, like are different for each person. Like I won't even get my money from Target for 60 days after each order. So I might be out that $50,000 for 6 to 9 months. And that's only just one product. Like,
yeah,
you know, if you're going in a retailer with 9 products, 9 times $50,000, you're looking at $500,000. And
trying to get that product funded, yeah.
Exactly. And so, yeah, we started running out of capital and I had to get 2 lines of credit. You know, I ended up qualifying to get like a $500,000 line of credit. But then again, we got the opportunity with CVS, and to be transparent, haven't done as well in CVS. We're on the bottom shelf. We aren't necessarily where our consumer lives. We're in a lot of Caucasian locations. And so I produced like $1 million of inventory and it's been very, very slow to get that money back. And so we are at a point where we need money. Like we can continue to maintain, but I can't really grow like I want to. Like if another retailer came to me or I have like some huge marketing opportunity, like let's say Mary J. Blige is like, hey, I want to work with your brand and I'm even willing to do it at a discount, but it's going to be $100,000. Like we don't have that capital right now. And so we, about 6 months ago, hired an investment bank to bring on private equity. So basically, I'm in the middle of selling a large part of my company, which I'm actually very, very excited about. Luckily, my business is in a really good position for me to kind of choose who I want. Mm-hmm. Like people end up desperate or don't have good financials, and so they really kind of have to take whoever is interested with me.
Right.
I've had a lot of people interested and it's been a really long process of me getting to know them and interviewing other founders that they have invested in and making sure that, you know, obviously money is very important, but I need to make sure that they have the same vision as me and that we're going to get along and that they're,
right, you know,
aligned with who I believe, you know, my consumer is and making sure my formulas don't change. So it's been a really interesting process that we're in the middle of closing right now.
So how do you feel when you talk about your formulas changing, how, you know, a lot of people get angry when companies sell their business because they feel that the formula is changing. Can you elaborate on the formula piece? How do you make sure that your formulas remain the same?
It's really interesting. You know, luckily I have mainly dealt with private equity firms that have been in the beauty industry, but I genuinely feel like that's the last thing any of them want to do. Like my company, 50% of orders come from previous customers, which is a very, very high percentage for the beauty industry, which means our formulas are working. People are repurchasing because they work. And like nobody wants to change that. I mean, I think that there's other ways that we're looking at. I don't think anybody's really looking at cutting down on costs. I think we're mostly looking at growing. Like, how do we grow our growth number? How do we scale this company? But I mean, everybody's just kind of looked at me like crazy. They've looked at what my formulas cost, and yeah, they could be a little bit cheaper, but when they see how well they work because of the high actives I'm putting, I'm not worried about it at all. Like, these are really, really smart people with smart brands in their portfolio that I trust that, like, they're not going to want to play with the formula and risk losing our customers' trust.
Right, right. Absolutely. And I know, like, for me, I know people, when we went into major retail, like, people were saying, like, don't change the formulas because people, when they go into these major retail, the formula gets watered down. And it's like, why would I want to change what created the brand to go into retail? Like, why would I want to water down my formula? Like, that doesn't even make sense to me. But so a lot of people are just uneducated on that. So I think what
happens, and I'll be again transparent about this, and this is a crisis my company has gone through, but I didn't own a lot of my formulas. You know, owning formulas are expensive, and a lot of my formulas are not things that you can make at home, like really high, like clinical actives. And so, you know, when I ended up getting a deal to go into Target and having to create high volumes, like a lot of my labs, like two in particular, they were on the smaller side and they weren't going to be able to keep up with the demand. And so when it was time for me to go to Target, I ended up having to switch labs. And one of my labs ended up doing me really shady. Like, I bought the formula, I paid them for it, and then, you know, it wasn't right. Like, the percentages of each active actually, like, it totaled more than 100%. And she wouldn't get on the phone with us. I mean, obviously, I ended up, let's say I paid like $7,000 for the formula. I took that money out of the last invoice I owed her. But like, so I ended up having to reverse engineer a lot of stuff. So I don't always think formulas change just out of people trying to save money. I think companies go through crises as they grow. Like, you know, as a business owner, you're not always the smartest. Like, I've made so many mistakes, and obviously now I'm like, okay, I have to own all of my formulas. Cause what if my lab, now that I have money, if my lab burned down tomorrow, I can't spend 6 months trying to reverse engineer something and make sure it's the same. I need to know. Like, we ended up in that crisis with my pumpkin mask, where it heats up to a very specific temperature. It is a very, very intricate product, and Target wanted it. And the lab that was making it was charging me an insane amount, but I didn't want to pass on the opportunity to put it in Target. So I put it into Target, even knowing that I wasn't making the money I needed to make. Like, I was damn near cutting even, but I'm like, okay, we're going to reverse engineer this. Well, wow. It took us a freaking year to reverse engineer. It was like every sample I got, I was like, it's almost there, but it's not quite. And my dedication is to my loyal customers. Like, I could not have them buy that product and feel like it had changed at all. And so every sample I got, I was so tempted, of course, to be like, okay, let's just approve it because I'm finally going to be able to make money off of it. But I was like, nope, I cannot have anybody feel like it's changed. And so, yeah, it was a year before we got it right.
Wow. That is crazy. And it is. I mean, that was it's some crazy. Great information that you shared because, like, that's the back end of business that a lot of people don't see. I mean, honestly, I haven't experienced that. So, you know, just to hear from your perspective, I'm just like, wow. So I'm sure that people that are listening is going to find a lot of value in, you know, what you just stated, because you're right. You know, owning your formulas is huge. That's important. And you have to have backup. Like, what if your manufacturer catches on fire? You know, what happens to the market? But, you know, I'm the same way. Like, I am not going to sacrifice the quality of my ingredients. I'm going to make sure that everything that we deliver has high quality ingredients. It performs well on the hair. So I'm like you in a sense, like, I'm a perfectionist because it has to be right. And so that's why I made the notion earlier that I just didn't understand why people were like saying on my social media, like, well, don't change the formulas because you're going into retail. And it's like, look, I use this product on my hair. Why would I want to change something that works? And like, they don't really understand like how involved we are in our brand, because that stuff, it matters to us. And that's what I think resonates with our customers, is that they know how involved we are as CEOs of the brand. Like, we're not the CEOs that's just like, oh, just put anything out on the shelf because I got to make my books look good. Like, no, I want my products to perform well and do exactly what they say they're going to do for our customers.
I would easily have another $1 million in my pocket right now if I wasn't such a perfectionist. Like, through the process, like, of going to retail and having to transition to some labs, like, you know, my customers and the results they get are the only reason I'm here. So I would never play myself and sacrifice it or chance it just for, you know, yeah, that'd be a nice
$1. Thing. Yeah,
exactly. Like, no, I mean, I'm not stupid. And I'm in this industry because of my own skincare problems. Like, I actually, you know, I use my products and they control my acne and they control my melasma. Like, if they stop working, I'm screwed. So, you know, I need them to work.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So if we can close out and you can just leave like a tad bit of advice or like one gem that you would tell, you know, an upcoming entrepreneur, like, what would that be?
I mean, probably people have just like heard it before, but I truly believe with passion and perseverance, you can do anything. I mean, I'm not always like a huge advocate for serial entrepreneurs. I mean, at the same time, look at what, you know, Jay-Z has his hands in a lot of different things and he's now a billionaire. So maybe like, if you're a serial businessman, maybe that's different. But for me, like, being so vested in something I was passionate about, something that affected me, like inequality and bad skin, that combination makes me persevere through every hard time. And I get knocked down all the time. Like, I think I've tried to, so many people have tried to sue me, you know, people have talked down on me. I've had formulas fail stability testing that I needed to deliver to a retailer. And like, I never feel sorry for myself. I'm always going to problem solution mode. Like, I'm going to get through this. And if, you know, I reiterate that to people, like, please keep in mind that being an entrepreneur is not about the glitz and the glam. And if, you know, it's not always happy. Like, I've probably spent more time as an entrepreneur, to be honest with you, unhappy and stressed than I have happy. But, you know, so I think that you have to be like just so dedicated to that movement, you know, and it's okay. Like, people think being an entrepreneur is the end all be all. And I really think it's like being happy, you know? So if you got a great husband and great kids and, you know, you're a teacher and you know, you're living, I don't want to say the simple life, but you're not an entrepreneur, but you're going to bed happy at night. Like, appreciate that. Like, don't look at mine and yours Instagram and feel like, dang, I'm not some girl boss. Like, I need to be like that. No, there's so much that comes behind that.
Oh, absolutely. I tell people all the time, like, you know, we can make it look good on Instagram, but that only shows like 2.5% of our lives. So it's not all the pretty pictures, and there are a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of nights that you're crying. So trust me, it's hard. And I don't ever want anybody to think that it's easy. Like, you have to do what you love, and you have to do what you're passionate about. And your passion shows. Like, every time you talk, I've seen you speak several different times. I can sense and feel the passion every time you speak. So I know you're definitely passionate about what you're doing, and you know it. I'm sure your customers appreciate it, because I appreciate it. So
well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, I just want to say one last thing. You know, my daughter, she's half Jewish and half Black, and one thing I'm so excited about is that one day, what I've done is going to show her. It doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter what your skin color is. Like, if you have a dream and you're persistent, you can do anything. Because if I've listened to everybody, like, nobody thought that, you know, I would resonate with my consumer. And at the end of the day, like, you know, I feel like people love authenticity and people love passion, and they can't deny a great product. And you have to, you know, dim out the haters. Like, look at what Rosa Parks went through. Look at what Martin Luther King went through. Like, sometimes the things that reap the biggest rewards in life are the hardest things. But, you know, like, just keep going, and you can do anything that you put your mind to.
Amen. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. All the time.
Yep.
Yeah, so, but thank you so much, Rachel. This was really good. I enjoyed this podcast. I've learned something new about you myself. So I'm leaving with a few little gems. So this was really good, and I really appreciate you for taking time out of your day and even recording this. So really
appreciate thank
it.
You, and I will see you Tuesday.
Yes, right. I'll see you then.
Yep. Okay. All right, cool. Well, have a great weekend. Thank you again.
All right, no problem. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
So there you have it, guys. That was my interview with Rachel, CEO of Urban Skin. And as I told you guys before I started this episode, that it was going to be a really good episode, great value. She shared a lot of information, which I'm truly grateful for. And some things that she shared, like, I haven't even experienced that. So that's why it's important to surround yourself with like-minded people, because you can always learn something from someone else. So if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you take a screenshot, upload it to your social media pages, to your Instagram pages, and tag us and let us know how you enjoyed this episode. So again, if you guys also haven't subscribed to my ebook, I have an ebook online that I just released. It's called Growing Your Business Through Social Media. Myel Organics was a business that grew from social media, and I put together some tips and also a little bit of information on how I grew my brand on social media. And you can find out more about my ebook on my website at themoniquerodriguez.com. And also make sure that you follow me on Instagram at ExquisiteMo and Myel Organics and at The Secret Sauce to Success. Until next time, I will talk to you guys later. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Monique Rodriguez, The Secret Sauce to Success podcast show. Stay tuned for next week. I will talk to you guys later.